That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to That Money Show. I am That Money Guy, aka Gabriel, but we'll just stick with That Money Guy for now. Here to bring you up to speed with everything to do with money. If you are unfamiliar with the show, let me quickly explain it to you. If you are familiar with the show, bear with for a second. But what we like to do here is discuss everything personal finance, the economy. We bring in a few guests to share their expertise on the subject. And the reason behind it is a really simple one. We aren't taught anything about money in school. In the UK, we also have this weird phenomena that money is just an unspoken thing. It's a taboo topic. We absolutely despise bringing up anything to do with money. So I've created an entire show where I do exactly the opposite, as you will find out very shortly, or you might already know. I love talking about money. I think it is the next best way to educate ourselves on the topic. And that's what I do every single week. So, join me today for an incredible show. We've got Alistair Douglas, the CEO of Totally Money, joining me, as well as Timmy Merriman Johnson, aka Mr. Money Jar, content creator, founder, and personal finance expert. I was about to say expertise, but I think just expert will do in that scenario. And also, as always, what we like to do at the start of this show is kick off with what's going on in the news. And as boring as that might sound, it is actually quite fundamental, because a lot of us either shy away from reading the news or read it and get way too confused as to what's going on. So I pick those stories that are actually going on within the economy that affect your back pocket, the things that you should actually know about, and I distill them and I will break them down for you to make sure that you can go into any dinner party and be like, let me talk to you guys about the news because I actually know what's going on. It takes me a while to distill them and understand them myself sometimes, but that hopefully allows you guys to do less work. So what is going on? Well, we had the latest inflation figures. Now, inflation is always the hottest topic at the moment. And these inflation figures actually look really good. Quite surprising. What are they? 2.3% in the year to April, down from 3.2% the month before. What are these numbers? What do they mean? Well, the Bank of England, you know, those guys that kind of try to control our monetary policy, have a target. They want it to be 2%. If you can kind of cast your mind back over the past couple of years, we were at extreme inflation rates of above 11%, I think, at one point. We're now down to 2.3%. That's pretty close to the target of 2%. Are we back? Is everything good? Not quite. Well, let me tell you exactly why inflation has dropped. The main reason is that energy prices dropped. That's the key thing right now. So energy prices, there's an energy price cap, which is basically the maximum amount that energy companies can charge you. That was lowered in April, forcing all energy prices down. I think here it says that energy prices are 27% lower in April compared to 12 months before. That's a 27% drop. Gas prices alone down 38%. Now, obviously, inflation hasn't dropped that much. Actually, it kind of has by a third. I'm not going to get into maths with you. This is a money show, but let's try and avoid maths because I know that will kind of turn a lot of people away from wanting to listen to what I'm talking about. But what I'm trying to say is this kind of energy cap is the reason why we have inflation drop so rapidly as of this week. Things obviously are looking better. These numbers are good. They are great. But they are also kind of caused by something external to like the Bank of England's control, the government's control. This is just something that's kind of set in. And the scary thing is, I think that reports are saying, like, as much as the Bank of England or the government say they've got control of inflation rates, it just seems to be so reactive to what's going on in the market. I mean, the inflation spike before was because of supply chains, the Russia war, the massive surge in energy prices, and just kind of, you know, spiraled everything out of control. If energy prices go up again, I'm fairly certain inflation will as well, as much as the Bank of England like to think they've got it under control. On the reverse, what did the Bank of England actually do to try and get it under control? Interest rates you might have heard of. We're currently at 5.25%. It sounds really high. It is kind of normal if you look at like the past 50 years, but if you look at the past 10 years, it is really high. Doesn't show any signs of being dropped just yet. But of course, if you keep listening to this show, we will keep you up to date and let you know as and when any major changes do happen. What else is going on? Now, this is a really interesting story. Selfishly, probably I'm saying that because it's about new home buyers taking ultra long mortgages. So, you know, when you buy a property, unless you have a serious amount of money, which I'm assuming most people do not, myself included, you require something called a mortgage to buy a house. A mortgage is just borrowing money from the bank, normally at quite good rates, because you're borrowing it, well, the tendency seems to be for like 25, 30, 35 years until you finish paying that kind of thing off. Well, new data is showing that more and more of us in the UK are extending our mortgage repayment time, so the time until we finish paying off our principal, we'll stop end paying off our mortgages, to beyond retirement. In other words, later than the retirement age. Why is that scary? Well, normally when people try to talk about, you know, how much you need to save for a pension and what you kind of need to have saved up so that you can spend kind of confidently after you retire and are no longer bringing in money, mortgages and kind of house payment prices aren't included in those estimations, because the whole idea is if you've had 30, 35 years within a property, you should have paid it off by the time you're, you know, 70 years old and retiring. That seems to be changing now. In other words, you might need a little bit more money going into your retirement years. But what are the numbers? So how many people are actually doing this? I told you there's been a spike, but is the spike really that crazy? Well, according to data from the Bank of England, 42% of new mortgages in the last quarter of 2023 went beyond the state pension age. In total terms, that was 91,394 pensions that were taken out. Go back to 1 year earlier, and it was 38% of new mortgages that were leaking into that time period. And if you go back 1 year further, it was 31%. So we've gone from 31% leaking beyond pension age to 38% to 42%. So in other words, new mortgages that are getting taken out are going well beyond. People are kind of extending it. And I'll explain a little bit why in a second. But again, to reiterate this point, the proportion of mortgage customers over 67, so that's the pension age in this country where you can start to, where the retirement age, sorry, is currently less than 2% of all people that have a mortgage. By 2040, so what's that? Quick math, 16 years, they're expecting that to rise to 5%, and just 10 years later, doubling to almost 10%. So why is this going on? You might ask yourself, and is this likely to be something that you do? Well, recent interest rate rises, in other words, you know, what we were speaking about before, the Bank of England set the interest rate, affects borrowing costs. So when you now borrow money for a mortgage, go back 4 years ago when the interest rates that set by the Bank of England were 0.25%, and you could borrow money really cheaply. The interest on your mortgage might be 1%, 2%. Now it's going up to 4, 5%. And how that translates into actually affecting you is your monthly repayment is going to go up. So maybe 4 years ago, you would have borrowed for a property that was £300,000 and you might have had to pay back £1,000 a month. Now, because interest rates have gone up, you have to pay a lot more interest per month. That might be now a £1,500 payment per month. So all of a sudden, you've gone from being able to afford that property to not being able to afford that property. But that might be the property that you've had your eye on and one that you really want to go for. So what can you do about it? Well, one key thing you can do to make properties more affordable is extend the period of time you're going to borrow over. So let's say you were paying back £1,500 over a 35-year period. If you say to your bank, well, can I pay it back over a 40-year period? They might go, okay, well, now your monthly repayments are £1,250 a month. Voila, affordable again. So more people are looking to extend this mortgage length, the amount of time they're borrowing the money over, to basically bring affordability back into the realm and go into those properties they want. And that's basically what's going on. You know, monthly payments going up, so people extend the length that they're borrowing for, and therefore leak beyond pension age. And yes, I do see this becoming more and more common. I mean, I'm looking at products right now for mortgage at 35 or 40 years. The average used to be 25 years, and now looking at 35 years. That's just something to be aware of going on in the news. And the last story. Now, this one's a little bit fun. I don't know how many of you listening are Swifties. I think that's the technical term for a big fan of Taylor Swift. Not gonna lie, some of her songs are bangers. I don't listen to that many of them, and I would love to sing one to you right here, right now, but I'm not gonna do that because that would just be painful for all of your ears. She's coming to the UK on a bit of a summer tour. You might have seen images, videos, TikToks of her performing all over the US, in fact, all over the world. She's probably making some serious money from that. In fact, I know she is. The numbers are quite literally out. I think someone said her average is about £17 million per in ticket sales per concert. That's not the news story. So the news story was, she's coming to the UK and there's been all these stories about her rejuvenating mini economies around the world. And the question is, will she be rejuvenating the UK economy? So here are the figures that have been put out by some research. It's estimated that she could bring in a billion pound boost to the UK economy because of her tour around Edinburgh, Liverpool, Cardiff, London. I don't really know where else. I don't have tickets. I apologise if that offends anyone. And also, like I said, she's going to have quite a few dates in each of those. So here's something else that's quite interesting. A study by Barclays has estimated that the average person attending a concert will be spending £848 on the experience once you kind of consider travel, food, accommodation, costs, drinks, obviously the tickets themselves, merchandise. You want to get that Taylor Swift t-shirt. A £1 billion injection to the economy. So will that take us out of, well, we're already out of recession, but will this have a massive impact? Unfortunately, the answer is no. There's a few reasons for this. Number one is £1 billion. It sounds like a lot, but it's actually a very, very small amount of kind of the UK's GDP, our gross domestic product. So no, she's not going to be revolutionising everything, full stop. And number two is the estimates are if the people are spending £848 in this entire kind of package to go see Taylor Swift, the estimation is that most people are cutting back costs in order to afford that. It's not like an extra £848 per person is going into the economy. It's more like, maybe, I'm sorry, but you have skipped your, you know, Christmas present this year, plus your birthday present, plus anniversary present, plus whatever other presents you get, because that is a serious amount of money you're probably reallocating instead of a new allocation. It's a reallocation of funds. So it's not going to be a full injection because a lot of that money would have been expected to be spent on the economy anyway. I'm sorry, Taylor Swift fans, you guys aren't saving the economy just yet. But maybe if she does a tour in a few years, we can change all of that and we can look at a new study. Anyway, that's it for the news. That was quite an exciting story and quite fun. Normally the news is quite boring and, you know, negative and pessimistic. But Taylor Swift brings a smile to all of our faces. Anyway, that is everything for now. And coming up straight after this, I'm going to be joined by Alistair Douglas, the CEO of Totally Money, to talk all things credit. It sounds boring, but it's really important. So I would recommend you to stick around.
FUBAR Radio presents
What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Joining me now is Millie Gooch, author and founder of Sober Girl Sobriety Society. I need to know what is so bad about dating sober.
I think it's just terrifying when it's something that you're not used to, because when I was drinking and dating, you know, like, you use it to calm your nerves, you use it for confidence, you rely on it. And I think that's the one thing I realised when I stopped drinking, is how much I really relied on alcohol. I was always kind of saying, you know, like, oh, I'm not dependent on it, but for my confidence I was really. But I also think there's so many benefits to it. Like, I used to go on so many dates when I was drinking, I'd be like, they are the one, and then I'd meet them like a few weeks later sober and I'd be like, we've got nothing in common, what was going through my mind? I'd be like, oh, it was because I was drunk.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
Harpreet, how are you, my love?
I'm great, thank you. How are you? It looks fun in there.
I want to talk about this because obviously you met your partner on The Apprentice. When did you start to get that feeling, I'm into him and this is more than just a banter or a friendship? Because it's a close environment being on a show like that, isn't it?
I really wish I could sit here and give loads of juicy gossip that actually we used to secretly meet in the laundry room on the show, but we didn't. And when I actually last spoke with yourselves, I think it was right after I'd won, we weren't even flirting, never mind dating. First time that I thought I actually fancied him was when I watched him on TV and I watched episode one.
How funny.
Hang on. You know, he's actually really good looking.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani.
And joining me in the studio, we have Deputy Leader of the Green Party, Zach Polanski. Zach, thank you so much for joining us. How are you keeping, Zach?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
So you're hoping for four MPs in the general. You think that's going to happen?
Yeah, that's absolutely the minimum at what we're
I don't want to be Piers Morgan here, but will you take out, I don't have £1,000, will you take a £100 bet with me that you'll get four MPs?
Well, I do everything in politics to talk about the harms of gambling. So for me to place us out there would be pretty horrendous.
We spoke, before we had you on, we discussed discussed with the producers as to whether I should do the bet joke. And I said I would, because I had every faith that you would answer it in the way I expect a politician of any moral standing.
We should also talk about cryptocurrency, which also is very problematic.
Rishi, if you're listening, mate, that's how you answer a betting question.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome back to That Money Show. As promised to you before, I'm being joined now by Alistair Douglas, the CEO of Totally Money. Alistair, welcome to the studio. I hope most people know by now that a good credit score isn't just a nice to have, it's a must have. Borrowing is a part of life for the majority of people within this economy, especially when it comes to things like car financing, mortgages, which I was just speaking about before.
Yeah.
So I think it deserves more airtime, and I think that's an essential reason why we've brought you on, because I have a bit of knowledge, you have a lot more knowledge. So let's start with Totally Money.
Mm-hmm.
Who are they, and what is their objective in terms of helping people specifically in the world of credit?
Yeah, so we're a free credit report service. We have an app. It gets your credit report, takes all the data from 6 years, and gives you a personalized action plan about what you should do to improve your credit score. So our whole basis for starting Totally Money was that we believe your financial data should work for you, not against you. And that's because, as we all know, the banks haven't covered themselves in glory over the years, and the system is very unfair, very opaque. People don't understand it. They don't want to understand it. They just want to know how they can do better. So that's what we're here to do.
I feel like we could scrap the next 15 minutes to say, like, you can just go use the app right now. Like, it's going to take. But I suppose let's interest people in it, and then they can go and use the app to make, I suppose it's personalized recommendations based on their credit score, or is it quite general? Like, there's a few key things that anyone can do to improve their credit.
Well, there are a few things that you can do, but by and large, it's going to be different for different people. And I think that's one of the reasons why it was frustrating, if you go back a few years, where, yeah, you can read, you know, blogs about here are the top 10 things you could do, but they may not be the right things for you to do. So we're all about helping you find the right stuff. But I can give you a bit of a kind of teaser about what sort of standard things that you should do to improve your credit score.
Let's sprinkle a few in there, and then we'll go a little bit deeper into it. But yeah,
quite topical as of today. Like, the number one easy thing to do, which definitely improves your credit score, is get on the electoral register.
Oof.
So
I hope that sets a lot of alarm bells off. Electoral register, is something's going on soon, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. So, get on the electoral register. It's easy to do.
Yes.
So unless you're kind of like sort of running from the law, get on the electoral register. That will improve your credit score, just because it's a data point. It allows lenders to be have some kind of assurance that you're a real person who exists and not a fraudster.
Mm-hmm.
Other things that you can do is make sure that your name's on the bills. That's so long as you're paying them on time, of course.
Yes.
Set reminders for things like bills. All your utilities will appear in your credit report. So that's not just gas, but that's also things like your mobile phone or your broadband. So make sure those are
Netflix subscription?
Well, no. Okay. Netflix isn't on your credit report, but actually we can maybe move on later to talking about sort of what open banking is doing to improve things. And actually you can now get credit for things like Netflix subscriptions if you sign up to certain services.
Okay, so there's a few things that you can do to improve credit, but let's rewind just for a second. Why do we need a good credit in the first place? And what even is like a credit score?
Yeah, well, I mean, the system is, as I said, the system is kind of ridiculous, but I guess why credit scores exist in the first place is that they were there for the purposes of banks, really. So a bank wants to lend you money. In the really old days, you would go into the bank, you would know the bank manager, and they would kind of know what your job is, and they would just make a judgment based off how they knew you. And as we moved into the kind of modern world, people living in cities, you don't know your neighbours, etc., things have changed. So the banks want to know that you are someone who'll be able to pay them back effectively. So the credit report was started as a way, it's effectively like a school report. You know, it's being done whether you like it or not. It may have lots of horrible stuff in there that you don't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
And banks use it in order to determine if they're going to lend to you. So if you've got a bad credit score, and the credit score is just a basic calculation based off what's in your credit report, then you won't be able to get a loan or a credit card. But also it has much wider impact, you know, so you won't be able to get a mobile phone contract because that's a form of credit. And then you have to pay more, or at least you have to pay up front. Up until very recently, you still will get put on prepay energy. So prepay energy is very, very inconvenient, and you have to pay in advance, which is not good. Up until very recently, it was more expensive as well. And actually, it's one of the few things this government has done to kind of help people with poor credit scores. Is they've actually stopped that. They've stopped the energy companies from charging you more for prepay.
They've done something good. No, yeah. It's not the politics show here. Okay, so to summarize, huge areas within someone's life are going to be affected by a good or a bad credit score, because we do borrow money, whether we like it or not. Like you mentioned, even it's not just a credit card. It's, like you said, energy, phone contracts, and the big one, the mortgage.
The mortgage, yeah.
Which I think is a huge one. Can people save money by having a good credit score? Because there's obviously this idea that maybe you'll get rejected by a mortgage. Mm. But can you get like better terms even from a mortgage provider, so lower interest rates if you're got a strong credit score?
Yeah, I mean, I probably should mention that. Like, the main reason for good credit score is that you're able to borrow more cheaply. Mm. So it's a system where if you're, you know, the better off you are, the cheaper you can borrow money. So it kind of is a sort of rich gets richer type system. Now, there's a logic to it, which is that if you're not going to pay it back, or you might not pay it back, then yes, you should be paying more interest, because you know, the banks aren't a kind of public service. But yes, if a personal loan or a credit card, you have a much lower interest rate if you have a good credit score. For mortgages, actually, you have to have quite a good credit score to get a mortgage anyway. And then because normally there's a fair amount of equity in your house, and therefore it's a secured loan, not an unsecured loan, the rate that you pay doesn't necessarily depend that much or at all on your credit score. But you won't be able to get a mortgage at all if you've got a bad credit score.
Got it. So with mortgages, it might be more black and white, yes or no. But with other products, it could be the difference between the actual rates that you get. So in other words, a good credit score can quite literally save you money.
Absolutely. And we've done some research recently where we kind of totted up how much extra you're paying each year because you've got a bad credit score. But, you know, as a kind of example, a really cheap loan at the moment would be at about 10% interest rate per year. Mm-hmm. But you can get loans up to 50, 100%. And then obviously even beyond if you go into the kind of payday space. So you could be saving huge amounts of money.
Okay. I'm sold. I've got all the background information that I need. I'm ready to do it. How do we get a good credit score? Is this something that someone who's listening from scratch should get involved with, or can this be applied to even someone that's looking at their credit score right now? They've gone on Totally Money, they've checked out. And do you know what? I downloaded the app this morning.
Oh, good.
And we'll take a look at my score live in a second.
Okay, that's exciting.
And then maybe I'll get some tips from you on some things that I can do to improve it. But let's go through some general long list of things mm-hmm. that anyone can do to improve a credit score.
Yeah, so, you know, so effectively it's kind of like how many data points can the data bureaus find about you, and the more data points there are, so long as they're good data points, the better the score that you'll have. So as I said, electoral register, utility bills, it's useful to have a current account. You want to make sure you've got a current account.
Yep.
That will often come with an overdraft. The overdraft will be on the credit report. You may not be using it. And this is one of the things where it's a bit more complicated. It's a bit of a myth. You don't need to have a credit card or a loan to have a good credit score. Mm. However, if you have got a credit card or a loan and you use it in the correct way, that can help improve your credit score too. So it's these types of things that will improve your score.
Okay. Because I think that's one of the biggest things that some people get told, that you need to have a credit card to have a good credit score.
Yeah.
So you said that's not true, but does having a credit card and utilizing it responsibly, is that one of the biggest factors to improving a credit score? Like, how heavily weighted is that within the score itself?
Well, I mean, there's no simple answer to this stuff, unfortunately, which is why we started Totally Money.
I thought I was going to get the secrets from you right
well,
here.
Well, the secret is, unfortunately, that, I mean, you said in the run-up to this, it's boring, and it is boring. Like, I mean, I don't pretend it's interesting, the actual credit scoring thing. The system is kind of stupid. There's actually three different credit scores that are primarily used in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Each of the three businesses that run them calculate the credit score in different ways based off different data that they have collected. So, you know, there isn't a credit score. You've got at least three credit scores, whether you like it or not. And then they will all have a kind of different way that they do it. But by and large, like, one of the things that you can do is you can say, okay, well, if you've got a credit card, try not to spend all the limit each month. So if you go above 80%, that will be a red flag and your score will go down. And that's because it looks like you're kind of unable to stop yourself spending right up to the limit, and you may be in some kind of financial distress. And actually, if you can, keep it below 20%, because then you'll get green lights all around then.
Yeah, because a lot of people will say, well, they've said I can borrow that much, I'm paying off every month, why should that look negatively against you? But you said it's kind of it's the image it's creating about you as a buyer, right?
Yeah.
Or the way that you spend money. It sounds like you're a bit out of control. Yes, you have the cash to cover it, but there's maybe some irresponsibility there, which I think is really interesting and something that people might not have ever considered. Should we do a bit of a live testing then?
Yes, I'm going to have to get my phone out as well in that case.
All right, let's do it. Okay, for those of you that are listening, I'm currently opening up my phone and I'm going to go on the Totally Money app right now and I'm going to read out my credit score.
And our score's live, so this is an interesting live test. I hope it's not like when Apple first demoed Siri.
Okay, well, this is great because right now it's not letting me log in. So talk about it. Sorry, we can't log you in with Face ID. Please try again via email. Okay, we will try it via email.
Hopefully it's not because you've woken up at the wrong side of bed or something. Your face looks different.
What have I done? This is what's it called? Live TV, live radio. This is the things that can happen. Yeah. The app is not. I was in it just before.
Live demos, children and animals. I think.
So we'll do one that I did from earlier. What's it called? Here's one I made earlier.
Yeah.
Okay. So my credit score, I can confirm, was 610.
Okay.
Help.
So 610 is okay, but not excellent, basically. Okay. So my score, has actually come down recently, which is a bit frustrating, but it's 642. And in the score that we report, the maximum you can get is 710. So that gives you kind of context for it. So you would be in the very good category, not the excellent. So by and large, what that means is that you don't need to worry, and you're certainly not going to fall foul of anything. You'll have access to everything, but you may not always be able to get the best rates. So you're not going to be someone who the energy company is sending a man around to put a prepay meter in, but it might be that if you're looking for a loan, you can only get, say, a 20% APR loan rather than a 10% one. Or if you're looking for a credit card, it might be that you can't get like a 2-year balance transfer deal. Maybe you can only get an 18-month balance transfer deal or so on. So you won't have access to the absolute best offers.
You know, like, I've got quite a competitive personality.
Yes.
And having lost to you there, I mean, to be honest, it's logical that I would lose to the CEO of Totally Money on the credit score. I would hope that was the case.
My score is nothing to boast about. My wife's is now better than mine as of the last.
I don't know if you want to say that live on radio, but I feel like I understand that. But I feel like I've now been set a challenge to improve my score. What did you say yours was?
642. As of right now, which is way down than what it has been, which is quite sad, actually.
642. The next time you hear me on radio, I don't know how quickly these things change, but I'm going to be updating you more regularly than you want to be updated, and I'm going to be sharing with you my credit score. So I want to ask you one last question before you do leave, and it's back to Totally Money.
Yeah.
So you said Totally Money kind of analyzes your credit score and gives you these kind of tips as to what to do. How else or what other things can Totally Money offer to someone using it to help someone take control of their finances?
Well, we have the ability to connect your current account to Totally Money via open banking APIs. And what that does is we have a whole part of our service which allows you to understand your spending and understand how much money left you have to spend before payday. So you set your payday and then we say, like, here are your bills and therefore here's how much money you've got left, you know, effectively to spend, because most people tend to think of, okay, well, I've been paid this much, less the bills, how much have I got left? And we also show you things like which bills, if you don't pay them, will negatively impact your credit score. We help you understand when you're going to be going into your overdraft and how best to manage that, and whether there's ways that you can spread costs without having to use your overdraft. Because in general, overdrafts are very expensive and not the best way to borrow. So that's one of the best ways that we help people, understanding how their spending relates to their borrowing so that they can reduce their borrowing and save money, and then also obviously get lower interest offers to save money too.
So it's a pretty holistic approach, and it's all free for someone to use?
App is completely free. We're very clear, we get paid if you successfully take out a credit product with a bank, they pay us. That's clear on our homepage. And yeah, we've had 5 million people sign up over the last 5 years. And it's obviously great to do something where we feel like we're helping people, but we get a lot of feedback from our customers. We were just talking about it this morning, actually, about like how it kind of helps you move on up in your life, because you don't want to be spending a long time thinking about it. But unfortunately, when you are in these situations where credit score is holding you back, you have no choice. It kind of can take over your life. So a little bit like some dating apps where they say, like, our goal is that you stop using us. That's our goal too. Mm-hmm. Once your score's perfect, we're kind of boring. Mm. But that journey from being either young or having had some kind of difficulty and then moving all the way up to a perfect credit score can take some time, and that's what we're all about.
Absolutely brilliant. I hope that this conversation has completely convinced anyone listening that credit is not boring, like I said at the beginning. I said it was a little bit boring, but very vital. Now I'm going to change that. It's exciting. It's got the competitiveness inside of me wanting to improve it, and it's still completely vital. So thank you very much for joining us today, and that was absolutely incredible tips. Go download Totally Money. I'm not being biased here because he sat right in front of me.
Thank you.
Cheers for your time.
Cheers.
And now that does bring us on to money tip of the week. And I like to be quite repetitive with this stuff, so I try to link a tip into something that I've been speaking about. And the tip is going to be super useful because a lot of you only actually take practical steps off the back of this section of the show. And that is, please go. Totally Money is one option. Just whatever it is, go and find out your credit score today. Don't care how, and improve it. I mean, unless it's obviously in the excellent score, then completely ignore this. But what I'm going to be doing today is I'm going to be downloading Totally Money, most likely. I'm going to be looking at the advice that I have to do, and I'm actually going to be implementing that. I'm putting myself on the electoral roll. Doesn't mean you have to vote, but you do have to put yourself on the electoral roll as one way to improve it. I'm going to be making sure that all my credit cards are being paid off in full. I'm going to be making sure that all of my bills are automated, because that's probably one of the easiest and quickest ways to make sure that's going out. I'm going to what else am I going to be doing? That's probably it for now, but that's why I'm going to download the app and check out the advice they have there. That's your tip of the day. Go improve your credit scores, and we'll catch you straight after this, where I speak to Timmy Merriman Johnson, aka Mr. Money Jar, again on all things finance.
Hey,
FUBAR Radio presents
All Areas. Mark from Married at First Sight UK.
See, at the wedding, you told Sean you were 26, but you're actually 36.
Oh, yeah.
So drop in that decade. We ain't gone 1 or 2 years either side. What was going through your head when you thought, I'm going to shave off 10 years?
A 26. Third of your life.
Yeah.
It was instant reaction. As soon as anyone says to me, how old are you? I'm like 26. I just stopped counting after 26. Would I have told Jim? Probably not.
No. Ever?
Well, maybe when we're 80 years old and we've got the grandkids running round.
Except you wouldn't be 80 years old. You'd be 90.
Yeah, I'd be 26 still. I'd be going around the corner for some more injections.
Politics Uncensored. Joining me now, the former leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, MP. And there you are, stood with hundreds of thousands of people at Glastonbury singing "Oh Jeremy Corbyn." What is that like?
It was quite extraordinary. It was an amazing experience, and I was very pleased we did it. We wrote, the office got very excited about Glastonbury. Every single person in the office thought it was necessary for them to be at Glastonbury.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. Yeah.
Every single one said it's really necessary for them to come.
The Dating Show.
I'm friends with a fair few sort of exes, and I think you can be friends with an ex, but I genuinely do. But I do think that it's timing is everything with that.
I think it depends what you cast as a friend.
Yeah,
are you talking about someone you're going to hang out with on your sofa? Like, if you've already shagged, isn't that a bit weird?
I think that's a different level of friend. I think that's a different level of friend. You can be friends with someone, you can't be like best fucking friends with someone. I mean, I've got exes that I talk to about their current partners and whatever else, and they'll tell me about that sort of stuff. But I wouldn't say, oh, do you want to come over for fucking Chinese and chill on the sofa?
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
Hey, everyone. Guess who it is? Well, obviously, it's me, that Molly guy. So, earlier, I spoke to Timmy Merriman Johnson. He's a close friend of mine, but more importantly, he is Mr. Money Jar. He is a financially qualified content creator who knows far too much about money. And I say far too much out of jealousy and nothing else. And we had a brilliant conversation that you really won't want to miss. So, give this a listen. Enjoy and, go get better with your money, because that's what we do here on this show. Let's talk a bit about Mr. Money Jar, because it's all about practical financial guidance, digital content, events, one-to-one coaching, and the second season of the podcast, would I say? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong there. It might just be the revival of the Mr. Money Jar.
It's like a reboot, because it was an Instagram Live series before, and then now it's a video one. And okay. I'd love to have you on, by the way.
Was that an invitation? Like, I promise you, that wasn't done before. I'm going red here. As for those of you that can see me on camera, I go red a lot, by the way. That's just me and who I am. I accept.
Oh, thank you.
But I want to just introduce you a little bit more, because there is other bows to your arrow. I don't know if they're bows, strings to your bow. Bows to your arrow is not a saying. Oh, that is so bad. We're going to go with it. I'm gonna be bold and stick with my weird sayings. There are bows to your arrow. Ambassador of National Numeracy, which is an independent UK charity, promotes the importance of numeracy. Brilliant, brilliant cause. So incredible that you do that. And not just that, you're an author. You have a book.
Book coming out next year, yeah.
There we go. Future author, but nah, current author. And you talk about all things. Budgeting, saving, getting on the property ladder, investing. The list goes on. You'll probably hear a bunch of those topics right now. But I want to start off with one question for yourself. What made you start creating content, especially the Mr. Money Jar program?
Firstly, thanks for that introduction, Gabriel. Yeah, what made me start making content about money? It was a similar experience to yours, for example. I had my first proper job in central London. I was a young person working, earning a salary in my overdraft from university, renting, like price of rent was going up, although it's like way higher now than it was at the time. And I just had questions about money, like how do I get a pay rise? What is a pension? How do I save up for a house deposit? And there was just nowhere for me to turn, really. I read some books and there was some stuff online, but at this point in time, we're talking about like 7-8 years ago, most of it was in dollars, like not a lot of it was in pounds and pence. So, but there weren't people like you online, there weren't platforms like TikTok and stuff like that. So I educated myself as best as I could. And then once I got to a point where I was seeing and hearing the same things a lot, I then decided to share. I made an Instagram page and it took off a little bit, but then it massively took off in the pandemic. Cause I think that was a period of time where everyone realized like, oh my goodness, like my financial situation could just change overnight. But then some people were on furlough and had a lot of surplus cash and were looking for what to do with their money. So I see it as my mission. And I literally spend like basically all of my time doing this, trying to reach as many people as possible to teach them about money in a way that's fun and accessible so that they can live their lives as best as they can.
That was an incredible answer. I think the one thing I'm going to pick up is the fun part, because personal finance, money, economy, not sexy topics.
No.
There's a reason why most people aren't educated on this topic, aside from the fact that they're not taught in our everyday education system, and it's because they're not incredibly fun. Mm. So people like yourself... and maybe me, but people like yourself, bringing a little bit of entertainment to it to grab that attention so that you can leave them with a bit of a truth bomb, something that they can take away. I think that's the great part about what you do.
Yeah, yeah. And when I got started creating on socials, it was still very much like pictures, the video revolution.
Oh, the days.
At that point, yeah. 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And like you, I found that a lot of the content to do with salaries and tax massively took off. So I did a post comparing the UK's income tax brackets to the Nando's Peri Peri scale. And that massively took off. And you had your mild taxpayers and your hot taxpayers and your extra hot taxpayers.
I
also did a post comparing if you have like who earns more, two people who are on 50k, like a couple that are on 50k each, or one person on £1 million, and the two people who earn 50k each, 100k.
I think they got one person on £1 million might be blowing them out of order.
Yeah, 100, 250k's versus 100k, and the two people on 50k earn more than 100k. So I think that's like people get paid every month, their salary is something that's known to them, and so stuff on that is interesting. But I think as we probably find, there's a lot more stuff that's interesting about money if you can just give it some time, you know, if you can just like dig into like what's going on in the news and like read books and watch content and stuff. So that's basically where I got started, and I'm here to stay, and I think you are as well.
I hope so, if you guys will have me for the future. What is so incredibly important about what you do and why I think it's so necessary is often when we get financial education, so the way that we've educated ourselves, unfortunately, there wasn't really much guidance to take us from level zero to level one. When I was doing my own research, learning about it, everyone seemed to think you had this minimal understanding of finances. All the books, the education places that I was going, the courses, the YouTubers, they thought that you had this this understanding, meaning that like you did have to kind of fill in the blanks, which is what we were doing. I think that's what's brilliant about your platform in particular is that you are addressing people from the start. You are expecting zero knowledge when someone comes to your platform. And I think that's vital because so many people get scared off by seeing level 10 as the starting point. Whereas if we can just bring them up to level one, I love this idea of levels and kind of like ladder steps, but like what you do, if you bring them up to level one and just like, you know, tickle their interest a little bit, we're going to make the entire world a better place. And I can promise you, if you put in that little bit of effort to take yourself from level zero to level one, you're going to drastically change your life. I mean, one thing that I've said quite often is the everyday person, anyone listening to this, you don't have to become a financial expert. You don't need to learn everything there is to know about personal finances. And I would go as far as to say, as putting in a couple of hours work into your own personal finances could probably set you up for the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
It is that easy.
Absolutely.
There isn't that much out there to take you from level zero to level one. The issue is it's not taught.
Yeah.
And we're going to dive into that a bit further down the line. But I've got another kind of question to you.
Sure.
About this topic, why it's not taught in schools. What's going on here? Like, what is your attitude towards it? What do you think about the fact that finance isn't taught in schools? And is there anything that people can do to change that?
Yeah, well, as you said, I'm an ambassador for National Numeracy, and we work with people in the education industry. And I'll say that teachers and schools, they work incredibly hard, and they have a lot of different subjects to teach. And they simply, like, even if they could teach personal finance, even though it's on the curriculum, I believe it's been on the curriculum since 2014, they simply don't have the bandwidth to teach it, which is where content creators like yourself and myself, financial services companies, charities, we do a lot of the educating, and sometimes we'll go into the school itself. What we have in the UK at the moment, Gabriel, is what I like to call the financial education problem. And there's three parts to the financial education problem. The first part is that we don't learn about money nearly early enough. So I'm going to put a question to you. At what age do you think your adult financial habits are set?
Let's just be generic and say 18.
Try 7.
7.
7 years old.
That was my second guess.
So by the time you're 7, your adult financial habits are set. They're not like encased in amber. You can obviously grow and change throughout your life. But this is an age at which you can understand that you can exchange money for stuff. And you have you don't have a sense of like luxuries versus needs, but you basically understand what money is, and you're like asking your parents for things. You can actually conceptualize what money is from age 3, 4, from when you're a toddler. The science shows that this is when babies can recognize different coins by their shapes and their colors and stuff. So if you're waiting until school, it's kind of too late. So the first part of the problem is we don't learn early enough. Second part of the problem is there's no standardized financial education. You've got all these different people kind of chipping in. But then also the reason why I don't kind of rag on schools so much is because the financial landscape, systems and rules change so much. So you both have to teach people at the earliest possible stage in their life, but then you need to update them constantly. And school can't do that. If you teach a child about finances when they're 3, by the time they've left school, like I'll use myself as an example. When I was at school, I used to use cash to pay on the bus. Online shopping wasn't so much of a thing. Now you've got buy now, pay later. Like every other day, there's an Amazon parcel in the foyer in my building and stuff. There's like all these things that school couldn't possibly have taught me. So what we need is a collective effort to teach people literally from that early stage of age 3, 4, all the way through their life until like pension age.
That is such a good point. I haven't even considered that. The fact that when we were growing up, the economy and the way that we interacted with money was so different. I mean, even tools like investing, which I know is a scary word to a lot of people, but speak to your parents' generation, and investing wasn't an accessible thing to the masses.
No, they didn't have, you know, there was an explosion of investment platforms over the last 10 years or so. You have open banking now, like, and it's going to change again.
Mm-hmm.
It's
quicker.
It's going to accelerate. We can't possibly anticipate. So I think we're all in it together. Schools, the banks, the fintechs, the government, like we all need to work together to do this education piece. It's not just one person's job.
I want to ask you a question off the back of this that I hope a lot of listeners have right now. And that is, if I'm someone starting with nothing right now,
yeah,
maybe just starting my first job, just come out of school, maybe I'm even in school, where do I start? It seems so overwhelming. There are, like you said, there are so many sources. What can I do to take that first step?
Do you know what? I'm going to say, like, go on TikTok, go on Instagram, go on YouTube and watch, you know, financial content creators from your country. Like, so we have so many people, like dozens of people in the UK who are sharing stuff. And I think the great thing about social media is that, like, you can read a textbook and you can read a book. And I do think that books are, like, very, very important. I would, like, say books are perhaps the most important way to learn. But I know that people are time poor. I may not necessarily have the time to read loads and loads of books. But if you go on social media, it's like bite-sized stuff. You can start learning from 30 to 60-second clips. There will be parents on there. There will be qualified financial advisors on there. There'll be students. Like, whatever kind of area of life you're in, there's someone out there that's creating content just for you. Start with that and learn about money in the ways that you interact with it in your life. So if you want to learn about income tax brackets, for example, you can actually go on and you can search that and then you'll get a bunch of videos. Google released some really interesting statistics last year where they showed that for the under 25 age cohort, they're actually losing 40% of their traffic. This is Google. 40% of their traffic to the likes of Instagram and TikTok, because people are now going to more visual platforms and short form platforms to learn rather than go to Google and see like a list of 10 articles that has been, you know, they've SEO'd to death to appear there. So that's how I would start. But then I would say, if you can read, like find, just go on Amazon, put like top UK personal finance books, find a book and read it. If you don't enjoy it, put it down, find another book, because all the stuff that you're seeing online will have come from someone reading something at some point, and books are the way to get the most detail and the most context behind the stuff that you're learning online. But start with short form videos for sure.
I think that's brilliant, because you've resonated with, I think, a large part of the audience that were like, oh, they're going to make me like read some journal or something like that. But you're right. The search engine capability of short form content now is so good that you can find exactly what you need tailored to who you are within a split second. And I resonate, because I think that I've started to use TikTok for my own search engine these days.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going on holiday in a couple of weeks, yeah, and I didn't go to Google for an itinerary.
Well, if you go to Google, it'll be like, here's like the top 10 things you should do. If you search it on TikTok, there's going to be a person that's actually in the place. They're going to show you the great restaurants. They're going to show you the cockroaches under the bed. You're going to get a way more authentic version of it. And then on top of that, so that's the content. But then there's people like you. You have a million followers, which means that your reach must be at least double that, like the number of people that are actually seeing your stuff. So you, my friend, are a TV station. Like, you are the network. Just the sheer amount of people that you have seeing your stuff.
You're so scaring me here.
It's not to be underestimated at all, this new way of learning about things.
I love that. And one thing I did want to pick up on as well, from my own, I suppose, personal advice and how to begin your education, is this idea of books. Now, I know books are scary to a lot of people. I went through a period of not reading for many, many years, as embarrassed as I am to say that. And I think that's quite common.
I did too.
You fall out of love with it. And especially with social media, it's so easy to grab your phone over grabbing, you know, a book. Unless you have your book on your phone, in which case, good for you. But what I would say is, it took one book to transform my life. And I'm happy to share.
Which book was it?
For me, it's a very classic one, Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
I love it.
And it didn't teach me about personal finance, but what it did is it got me motivated to learn about personal finance. And that started a bit of a spiral for me.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that you need to do what I did and go on such a spiral that you end up putting your face on the internet and talking to yourself in front of millions of people. That's not the step you need to take. But books are, whether we like it or not, the fundamental source of a lot of knowledge. Mm. And like you said, if you just Google the top books, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I'll even give that my own personal recommendation. You're welcome, Richard Kiyosaki, for the shout out of your book. But it's such a classic, and it will, I can promise you, if you read that from front to back, you will think to yourself, I actually want to start learning about this a little bit more because it seems so important. Any book recommendations from yourself? Anything that you've liked?
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of books on the market, but I've got to give a shout out to, and a thank you to Claire Barrett at the FT, who wrote What They Don't Teach You About Money. And she included me, very kind to include me as a contributor in that book. She gave me a double page spread in there where I give my Nando's income tax bracket example. So go give that a read.
The Nando's income tax bracket is genius, by the way. I can't stop thinking about that since you mentioned it at the beginning of like when we brought you on. All I'm thinking about is
watching that video, and how have I not seen it already?
This is what I was saying. So back then, it was infographics. So I literally did a stacked bar chart of like where all of the different bits
are. I don't deal with pictures, just video these days.
Maybe I should do a video version of it.
I think if you did a video version of it, it would go viral.
Yeah.
I can almost guarantee it. So when you're listening to this and you've now seen the video version of this, got it viral.
That it was born here.
You've just listened to its birth. Yes. The birthplace. I mean, the idea was already there, by the way, years ago. Infographics. Important. Okay. Another quick question. How much effort should people be putting in? We've spoken about how to start. And you've also briefly spoken about how this needs to kind of be continued. If I'm someone thinking, okay, you know what? Like, I'm happy. I'm ready to start. I'm going to do a little bit of effort. But like, can I kind of just do it and drop it? Or should I be keeping up? How do I keep up? If I'm someone, like I said, diving into this for the long term now,
yeah.
What would you say to them?
How much effort? So we all need not go any further than our local supermarket to see how high prices are at the moment. And as you said at the start of the program, whether we like it or not, money is a part of all of our lives, and therefore it's something that we need to keep tabs on. I think money is analogous to health. I see it as something that, like, you just want to monitor and that you want to make sure is okay. But I'm also a believer, and you also made this point, in creating systems and habits which you kind of build once and then serve you for the foreseeable future. So I want people to put in effort, but I don't necessarily want them to put in, like, the same effort over time. Maybe it's like a startup bit of effort and then it kind of peters out over time. So there's a few simple things you can do. Have a weekly money routine. I used to have a monthly money routine, but once prices started to increase, I have a weekly money routine. I will check my bank accounts. I have a free budgeting app, which I've linked all my bank accounts to. I'll check it every Sunday. I'll look back at the last 7 days. I'll see all my money in, all my money out. And if there's a few too many takeaways, a few too many Ubers in there, I will tweak it and make a non-judgmental plan for the week ahead. Great. When it comes to paying for your bills and subscriptions, create a bill day. Do you have a bill day?
I don't have a bill day. My bills go off on all different days. Yeah, but I'm on top of them, I promise.
So that's like a death by a thousand cuts type situation, right? Where like you have
calling me out, right?
Money in your bank account that's liable to be taken out at any point in time. So what you can do over the course of a month or two is have all your bills come out by or on a certain day of the month. My day is the first of the month. So literally that's the day when my bills, where my utilities, my rent, my subscriptions, they all come out. And that means that all of the money that's left in my bank account for the rest of the month is for me to spend. That's something that you can set up and then you don't need to think about it anymore. And then lastly, I'd say have a two bank account strategy in place as well. So try not to spend from the same bank account that you get paid into. Because again, if all of your money is just sloshing around in one place, you're going to dip into your savings and spend all your money. So when you have your bill day, take a bit of money, like pocket money, put it on a separate card and then spend from that. And you'll be amazed at like how your brain adjusts to your spending from this second card. A lot of money stuff isn't to do with willpower or discipline at all. It's actually just setting up systems and processes which serve you for the long term. And then all you're doing is going in and you're just tweaking a little bit here. You're just buffing down a little bit there. But like you set it up once and it's done.
This, I mean, I love that we've given practical advice now to the listener. We've actually given you something to do off the back of this show. So if that hasn't inspired you, if you don't want to read that book, at least, at the very least, take those last few actions that Timmy gave us. And before I do say goodbye and thank Timmy for being here, in one sentence, one piece of advice to the listener, because I want to leave them with just that one thing resonating in their mind.
So I'll give a book recommendation of my own, which is The Richest Man in Babylon. And The Richest Man in Babylon says, when you should aim to save like 10% of your money, basically. So try not to spend 100% of your money. If you earn £10, save £1, spend £9. If you do this throughout your life, you'll never have to worry about money.
I think that was an incredible way to end the interview. Timmy, thank you very much. I've learned a lot. I hope that you've learned a lot from that interview. In particular, I think that it's become very clear that finance is essential, but shouldn't be overwhelming. It's quite as simple as that. We're talking a few hours of initial startup and then maybe a little bit, like you said, a little bit of fine tuning here or there. That's the biggest takeaway that I've seen. I mean, the way that Timmy speaks about finance, I hope has de-stressed the idea. That's probably not a word, but removed some stress levels from you rather than adding stress levels to you, because I mean, it definitely did so for me. So how was that? He's pretty smart, right? That was Timmy Merriman Johnson and myself, but he was the, you know, the star of the show, Mr. Money Jar, flexing his financial knowledge for all of you and hopefully making you a little bit smarter with your money, because ultimately, as I keep repeating, that is the goal of every single one of these shows. Anyway, diving straight into arguably one of my favorite sections of everything I like to talk, scam of the week. I feel like we needed some kind of fanfare for that, or some kind of jingle, like it's the scam of the week. I'm not gonna make it up. Maybe I'm getting Taylor Swift too much in my head. So what scam have I got for you guys today? By the way, this isn't me scamming you. This is me making you aware of scams so that you don't fall for them. Just got to probably say that more often. I heard this one recently on a podcast. Apparently, and I haven't seen this myself, but people are selling money on places like Facebook Marketplace. Like, so, for example, they will say, I have £15,000 worth of cash. Do you want to buy it for £12,000? Okay. Let's see what about that sounds like a scam, because people are actually buying it. Let's start with the fact that £12,000 in exchange for £15,000, why wouldn't they just keep their own money? Scam alert. Number two, selling money. Scam alert. Number three, selling on Facebook Marketplace. Scam alert. Number four, it's probably going to be fake money. Scam alert. Listen. I'm not trying to say that no one falls for this. I'm not trying to say that even someone like myself won't fall for this, because it's like this incredible deal, you know? You're literally saving £3,000. When I say it out loud, it does sound ridiculous, but people are doing it because these scammers wouldn't put up these advertisements if people weren't actually falling for it. Here's what I would say. If someone offers you money for less money than you can buy that money, I know that sounded really confusing, avoid, avoid, avoid. It's a scam. And even if it's real, it's probably illegal. Don't think you're going to get away with it. Most likely, you're going to spend a bunch of money on money that isn't even real and you can't even use it. And even if you're like, oh, but maybe it's only slightly fake, places will recognize it. And yes, they will call the police on you and you will have some kind of punishment put against you. That is scam of the week. See, came up with my own jingle. How was that? It's now time for some of your questions that you have been writing in, asking us about. As a reminder, you can DM us at That Money Show on Instagram, where we get a bunch of DMs asking us, can you answer this question I've always had about money? I like to answer the questions that perhaps you've always been too embarrassed to ask. So what you can do is you write us a little message as a DM on a question that you're like, I feel stupid asking this, but could you just answer the XYZ anonymously, and voila, you've got a radio station answering those questions for the public. And the nice thing there is there's probably going to be quite a lot of people that have the same question as you. So number one question from Jordan. What's the best way to get out of debt when you're using debt to keep yourself afloat? This is a really hard situation. Obviously, cost of living crisis. Some people are literally requiring debt to keep themselves afloat. Number one is I would do everything in my power. Debt is awful. Debt is horrible. To get yourself away from relying on debt within your necessities. So I hope to keeping yourself afloat, you quite literally mean like all of that is going on, you know, living expenses, the things that you require to keep you alive. There's no luxuries there. Because if that is your position and you are spending money on luxuries, forget it, mate. Like, forget the luxuries for that period of your life. You're going to have to suffer. You're going to have to sacrifice for a short period, because ultimately debt is a horrible domino effect. And once you start getting in, it gets worse and worse and worse, and you kind of get trapped. Let's get out of that as quickly as possible. The moment you have some excess money, pay off your highest interest debt. This is what I would say mathematically, aggressively. Everything pours towards that. Once that one's paid off, pay the next one. Once that one's paid off, pay the next one. And do everything you can to get out of that situation. You're probably got to sell the car, downgrade the car. And if you're living somewhere nice and you have the ability to move home, move home. That is not something you want to mess around with. If you have those kind of options available to you, this is the time to take them. Get out of debt and then start living your life. And make sure that you've recognized how horrible this situation was to never go back into it again. The other question that I'm going to ask, because there's only time for one more, is Theo's asked, I'm a small content creator and I've started making enough money to consider quitting my job and doing it full time. Well done, Theo. Pretty impressive. Do you have any advice on taking the leap and making sure I'm financially sound? Well, Theo, good question you're asking me, because pretty much a year and a half ago, I was making content on the side and I was making enough money to quit. Number one, please make sure that that isn't a career that you want to pursue anymore and you really want to go all in on the content creation. That's really important. Number two, please make sure there is a reason you're going full time. If you're doing the maximum that you think you can do with that content creation career and you're doing it fine on the side, maybe ask your work if you can drop down to 4 days or 3 days rather than going all in. Don't just give yourself like, you know, hours in the day to do nothing because you're making some money from content creation. But what I would say is build yourself a 12-month emergency fund. Work out 12 months worth of expenses, build that amount of money, put it aside and cover yourself. If you don't earn another single penny, you'll be fine for that year. That is kind of how you get financially sound to take the leap. And that's what I did. So that's all we've got time for today. I really hope you enjoyed listening to, well, firstly, Timmy Merriman Johnson, aka Mr. Money Jar, and also Alistair Douglas, the CEO of Totally Money, helping us with all things credit. You've had your tips, you've had your scams, and remember that you can download the app, the FUBAR app, to listen to the show every single week. You can follow us on social media at That Money Show on every single platform. And if you want to listen back to the entirety of the show, anywhere that hosts a podcast, we will be at That Money Show. Come give it a listen. You will get better with money by listening to it. I have been That Money Guy. This has been That Money Show. And thank you for getting better with your money every single week.